19th. I am certainly fortunate among men. This morning, when, tentatively, I spoke of going away, Mr. Sloane rose from his seat in horror and declared that, for the present, I must regard his house as my home. "Come, come," he said, "when you leave this place, where do you intend to go?" "Where, indeed?" I graciously allowed Mr. Sloane to have the best of the argument. Theodore assures me that he appreciates these and other affabilities, and that I have made what he calls a conquest of his venerable heart. Poor, battered, bamboozled old organ! He would have one believe that it has a most tragical record of capture and recapture. At all events, it appears that I am master of the citadel.
Page 9.
For the present I have no wish to evacuate. I feel, nevertheless, in some far-off corner of my soul that I ought to shoulder my victorious banner and advance to more fruitful triumphs. I blush for my beastly laziness. It isn't that I'm willing to stay here a month, but that I'm willing to stay here 6. Such is the charming, disgusting truth. Have I really outlived the age of energy? Have I survived my ambition, my integrity, my self-respect? Verily, I ought to have survived the habit of asking myself silly questions. I made up my mind long ago to go in for nothing but present success, and I don't care for that sufficiently to secure it at the cost of temporary suffering. I have a passion for nothing, not even for life. I know very well the appearance I make in the world. I pass for a clever, accomplished, capable, good-natured fellow who can do anything if he would only try. I'm supposed to be rather cultivated, to have latent talents. When I was younger, I used to find a certain entertainment in the spectacle of human affairs. I like to see men and women hurrying on each other's heels across the stage, but I am sick and tired of them now. Not that I am misanthrope, God forbid. They're not worth hating. I never knew but one creature who was, and her I went and loved. To be consistent, I ought to have hated my mother, and now I ought to detest Theodore. But I don't, truly on the whole, I don't, any more than I dote on him. I firmly believe that it makes a difference to him, his idea that I am fond of him. He believes in that as he believes in all the rest of it, in my culture, my latent talents, my underlying earnestness, my sense of beauty and love of truth. Oh, for a man amongst them all, a fellow with eyes in his head, eyes that would know me for what I am and let me see, they had guessed it. Possibly such a fellow as that might get a rise out of me. In the name of bread and butter, what am I to do? I was obliged this morning to borrow $50 from Theodore, who remembered gleefully that he has been owing me a trifling sum for the past 4 years, and in fact has preserved a note to this effect. Within the last week I have hatched a desperate plan. I have made up my mind to take a wife. A rich one, bien entendu. Why not accept the goods of the gods? It is not my fault, after all, if I pass for a good fellow. Why not admit that practically, mechanically, as I may say, martially, I may be a good fellow? I warrant myself kind. I should never beat my wife. I don't think I should even contradict her. Assume that her fortune has the proper number of zeros, and that she herself is one of them, and I can even imagine her adoring me. I really think this is my only way. Curiously, as I look back upon my brief career, it all seems to tend to this consummation. It has its graceful curves and crooks, indeed, and here and there a passionate tangent, but on the whole, if I were to unfold it here à la Hogarth, what better legend could I scrawl beneath the series of pictures than so-and-so's progress to a mercenary marriage?
Page 10.
Coming events do what we all know with their shadows. My noble fate is, perhaps, not far off. I already feel throughout my person a magnificent languor. as from the possession of many dollars? Or is it simply my sense of well-being in this perfectly appointed house? Is it simply the contact of the highest civilization I have known? At all events, the place is of velvet, and my only complaint of Mr. Sloane is that, instead of an old widower, he's not an old widow, or a young maid, so that I might marry him, survive him, and dwell for ever in this rich and mellow home. As I write here, at my bedroom table, I have only to stretch out an arm and raise the window curtain to see the thick-planted garden budding and breathing and growing in the silvery silence. Far above in the liquid darkness rolls the brilliant ball of the moon. Beneath, in its light, lies the lake in murmuring, troubled sleep. Round about, the mountains, looking strange and blanched, seem to bare their heads and undrape their shoulders. So much for midnight. Tomorrow, the scene will be lovely with the beauty of day. Under one aspect or another, I have it always before me. At the end of the garden is moored a boat in which Theodore and I have indulged in an immense deal of irregular navigation. What lovely landward coves and bays, what alder-smothered creeks, what lily-sheeted pools, what sheer steep hillsides making the water dark and quiet where they hang. I confess that in these excursions Theodore looks after the boat and I after the scenery. Mr. Sloane avoids the water, on account of the dampness, he says, because he's afraid of drowning, I suspect.